We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Dingo, the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans won every single game they played this week because I am pretending like the San Antonio game never happened. Michael, did you watch the San Antonio game?
Yeah, while I watched Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, I think her name is, in the movie The Heat, and had NBA TV on simultaneously, I had one-third of an eyeball on what might have been one of the biggest mismatches in NBA's. I mean, it wasn't fair. I wish there was some nice way that you could have just forfeit that game and we get a day off. The Spurs get to continue going their streak and nobody's subjected to that. But I mean, throw that away because the rest of the week was great. I'd say one of the best weeks of the season. And according to most people, had the best win of the season in it. So just throw the Spurs one out.
All right. Good, because we'll just pretend it didn't happen then. And we'll go back to the start of the week, which seems like it was a while ago. I had to, think about the game for a second. But Brooklyn. Pelicans face Brooklyn, who's been on a bit of a tear. Darren Williams is starting to show a little bit of his... I guess he kind of does this every year now, where he takes the first half of the season off and then starts reminding everybody that, hey, he used to be a pretty good point guard. And Pelicans get down big. Storm back, win in overtime. Who was your favorite Pelican in that game?
Wow. I mean, in that specific game, it's really hard not to go with Tyreek. Tyreek's a guy that I think has a lot of that Aminu flair where you just don't see the emotion with him. He's not a guy who's very animated, doesn't get up or down.
And you call that flair?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying he doesn't have. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of the movie Office Space, so yeah, I call it flair. but yeah, he doesn't have a lot of that, and sometimes you just don't know, about guys like that, and if they really care as much as I guess we assume the guys who are ranting and raving do. But he seemed pretty upset when the Pelicans got down big, and he looked like he refused to lose that game. He just kept pushing the ball even when things looked futile for a while there. And yeah, he did have 7 turnovers because he was he was trying to do a lot, but I mean, outside of just the stats, 33-10-7, which are insane on only 19 shots. I think this game was the game that I really at least answered the question for myself. Tyreke Evans really does care about basketball and really does care about winning. And, you know, that's something that beyond this game, you know, I'm happy to see.
Yeah. Even there's a point in the Utah game where the second quarter had just started and they were letting it slip away. Utah had gotten a few baskets and Tyreke drove hard, got fouled, and you saw him turn around, bark at his teammates, "Come on, guys." I mean, he's like, he wants to win, and that's good. I can't say that about every player on this team, I don't think. But I'm not going to call anybody out right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty good locker room overall. But, I mean, to me, a couple of things that stood out. The first is, I mean, just, again, befuddled by Monty Williams. You're right. This does seem a long time ago. But this was just the next game after the Pelicans had defeated the Heat. Luke Babbitt starts in that game. The Pelicans go small. The offense looks good. You think going against Brooklyn, who has no true center with Brook Lopez obviously hurt, they start Plumlee at center. Eventually they bring Blotch in, who's a bigger body, but he comes off the bench. You would figure with that, I personally thought they were going to start Aminu at the four because Brooklyn starts Paul Pierce at the four. But I thought, you know, either way, maybe Aminu starts, maybe Babbitt starts at the four, but I was sure I was going to see Anthony Davis at the five. And nope, you know, coming right out, Anthony Davis is stuck out there chasing Paul Pierce, so Greg Stiemsma could get a start. You know, Pierce gets hot early because, you know, can Davis cover a perimeter guy? Of course he can, but why would you want to pull one of the best rim defenders and rebounders in the league away from the basket? Monty does it. Predictable results. The first half, the Pelicans struggle, especially defensively. No surprise without their rim protector there. And, you know, I was just confused right from the beginning. I think the Pelicans coming back and pulling this game out, you know, saved a lot of message board space and a lot of space on comments, because I think people would have been rightly justified in questioning what Monty was thinking. And, you know, it just comes off of us in the last podcast saying, well, maybe he's learned, maybe he's evolving, and boom, he just spits right back in our face and throws Stiemsma in the starting lineup.
Yeah, maybe he thought Mason Plumlee was an all-star because of the last time Brooklyn and the Pelicans met. So he needed a defensive master, a wizard, in Greg Stiemsma down in the post controlling that guy. You got me. You know who I was really impressed with in that game, though? And he has a mediocre stat line. But Sean Livingston, that guy just knows how to play basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to be out there and dominate anything for you, but if he's like one of your sixth, seventh guys, you're in pretty good shape, I think.
And that's funny. This team, I mean, they have a bunch of guys who are getting paid, you know, now with Marcus Thornton, $8 million and up all the way into the 20s. And really, two of their more impressive guys to me are Sean Livingston and Andre Blotch, who are basically, you know, minimum or right around the minimum players at this point. And yeah, I mean, they're a team that I could see causing some havoc in the playoffs. I hope them and the Bulls don't meet in the first round. I hope one gets the three and the other one gets the four, the five. Something like that, so they could both advance and play Indiana and Miami respectively. But yeah, I mean, it's a team like you said that has been good as of late, and it took everything from Tyreke and Anthony Davis yet again in this game. But to me, the funniest part about this whole game is just, I mean, Anthony Morrow was off this game, and you know, couldn't seem to hit anything, but you know, fourth quarter, easily one of the biggest buckets of the game. And then in overtime, he kept shooting so much so that Monty was about ready to pull him out. Babbitt actually didn't get to the table soon enough. And then he, along with Brian Roberts, iced the game with some huge threes down the stretch. And it's just, you know, these last couple of weeks, has just solidified for me that, you know, somehow, some way, you gotta bring Anthony Morrow back, because yeah, there's plenty of shooters in this league, but he just has a little something extra that, you know, can't quite put my finger on, but I want him on this team for the next couple of years.
He's got moxie.
Moxie.
So I gotta give Brian Roberts some credit for this game, because he fought through. I mean, he was playing on a bad wheel for the last 5 minutes he played after they, I forget who reached in on him, but basically forced him to hyperextend his knee, it kind of looked like. And he drilled those free throws cold as ice and stayed in. And he was torched a couple times on defense, but they did not grind him down. I mean, if Brooklyn was smart, they would have just said, all right, whoever Brian Roberts has switched onto, torch him. Because he was clearly slowed out there. And he's not a brilliant defender in any way, means anyways. But he was out there and he played through the pain and he was hitting big shots. And I mean, it was a good game for Brian Roberts. So I don't know. The more Brian Roberts plays, the more, you know, I kind of appreciate what he's been doing for the Pelicans.
Yeah. Again,
which is saying a lot.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's always been the role, he's in, and then, you know, the frustration with having so many scores and he over dribbles. But
playing next to Tyreek Evans, if Tyreek Evans is the primary ball handler, he's not awful.
Yeah. I mean, if he gives up control, I like you said, I think a lot of the frustration is early in the season. It was really, there was, when everybody was out there, there was only room for one guy to play, Roberts or Rivers. And, you know, Monty went with Roberts, and, you know, the fan base is not going to be happy when the 10th overall pick is just sitting on the bench behind, you know, an undrafted free agent who doesn't seem to have much upside. But I agree, those free throws were huge. I thought immediately that he was going to have to come out, which means the Nets would have been able to choose, you know, who got to shoot free throws. And those were two critical free throws at that point. So him staying in, toughing it out, even coming back later in the week, not 100% to play against San Antonio and, you know, arguably be our best offensive player in that game, says a lot. I think this game swung, obviously, again, when the Pelicans went small. I thought, you know, the defense got better as well, just, you know, forced Brooklyn into a lot of mid-range shots. Morrow continues to crack me up. I mean, in fourth quarter and overtime, Morrow took 12 shots. Anthony Davis, Tyreek Evans, and whoever else you want to put combined did not take 12 shots. So, I mean, there was no three guys. I mean, so Anthony Morrow just, you know, and it's not like he was crazy hot. He was 4 of 12, but the guy just has that irrational confidence that you need. But yeah, overall, I thought it was, you know, it was a good win, obviously, to build off of that Heat one, but it's still incredibly frustrating and leaves you wondering about the future when it's so clear to see, you know, especially in matchups like this, that you know, you go smaller, or if the other team's, you know, going small, that gives you a chance to put AD at center, and Monty I don't understand. There's no thinking. There's no thought process. I mean, Steamsma starts off, the Pelicans are -4 in the first half. He comes in the second half and starts again. And in 2 minutes, it takes them 2 minutes to pick up two fouls and -4 again. Right there, those are, you know, that's an 8-point hole that you're making everybody else climb out of. And thankfully, this team was able to do it, but it's got to worry you long-term that you just wonder if Monty will ever, ever get it.
Yeah, I'm actually not that worried about it, as long as Ryan Anderson returns. Because I have a feeling that we would see Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson starting next to each other. He's starting to do it earlier in the season. And, you know, he's not crazy enough to think that Steensma is a better player than Ryan Anderson, that he should be starting over.
Not Steensma, so. But if they go out and get, this summer, if they go out and get Kostakoufos, who's a guy I actually like,
mm-hmm.
in a game like this, you know, does Monty Williams start Costa Kufos?
Yeah, I bet he does.
It's because it's a traditional lineup. And if so, I don't – so that's what even scares me more. Yeah, Brian Anderson is back, and this team doesn't upgrade the center position at all. I agree with you because he would his hand would be forced. But, you know, if they go out and even marginally upgrade the center position, that's my worry. My only other thought coming out of this game was, if you go back and listen to the podcast last week, I bring up the question of, all right, you know, is Aminu turning a little bit of a corner? Is he a guy that we have to keep an eye on for next? You know, maybe we were wrong again. Maybe now he's getting it. And Aminu never fails to show you as soon as possible that he's been teasing you all along, comes out in this game, goes 0-for-5 from the field, you know, just 5 rebounds in 29 minutes. But, you know, just again, he has some good games this week too, but just always going to be a frustrating player that you just never know what you're going to get from game to game.
Yeah. Although, I think I said this in the last podcast, I'm more and more in line of I would rather have Aminu come back than Jason Smith. If you can pay only one of them a middle low contract, like around like the 2 to 2.5, I'd rather see Aminu than Smith. Which, you know, I really like Smith. Sorry, Jason Smith, if you're listening to this, but I don't know, just Aminu, as long as he's coming in as a backup four, I like his fit a little bit better. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So anything else about this game you want to be talking about?
No, let's move on to the game of the year.
The game of the year. Los Angeles Clippers fall to the Pelicans by 2 points. And that's despite the fact that Jamal Crawford was letting fly like crazy from three.
That's the Sports Center headline, by the way. Clippers lose to Pelicans. It's never when we beat a team like this, it's never Pelicans defeat X. It's always the other team losing to us. But yeah, and I'm glad.
Are you starting to feel disrespected?
No.
Are you going to be like the San Antonio Spurs, right? Like fans who get on every post everywhere and say, "How dare you not talk about the San Antonio Spurs?" Okay. If like the headline is like Pelicans and Clippers have game, they're like, you should be talking about the Spurs.
I really couldn't care less. I mean, I like something being mine. I like the fact that nobody else knows about this dirty little secret because, you know, when this team gets out and everybody starts liking it, it's going to be the exact opposite. Everybody's going to get territorial and mad. I like this team from the beginning. You're a bandwagon fan. Well, you know, enjoy it while it's yours and nobody else knows about, you know, how Tyreek Evans is going crazy. I mean, my Twitter timeline is full of people tweeting at Bill Simmons, telling him about Tyreek Evans' latest stats and how stupid are you. I mean, first of all, do you think Bill Simmons ever reads any of that? And secondly, what do you care what Bill Simmons thinks? I mean, you know what you know. He doesn't need to justify anything for you. So I go the other way. I love being the little secret. I love having our little community here that we could talk about it and interact with each other. I don't need national media and I don't need, you know, national fans peeking into our little corner. I like the secret.
Yeah. So this particular game, Chris Paul went 0-of-12 from the field.
Mm.
Was that Chris Paul just having a bad game? Or did the Pelicans actually do something to him?
I think,
because I saw them given, I've seen a lot of people giving the Pelicans a ton of credit for that.
I would say maybe 10%, the fact that the Pelicans had some bigger guys to put on him. You know who I actually, you want to know who I credit for this win? And it's what you brought him up already kind of when you started talking to this game.
Greg Stevenson.
No, I think Jamal Crawford getting hot was the reason the Pelicans win this game.
I kind of agree with
because,
you.
You know, you see the game start off and immediately, Anthony Davis gets into foul trouble. The Clippers' big men, you know, at least Blake and DeAndre seem to have a big advantage down there with quickness with Blake and with DeAndre just being able to overpower any center we could put out there. And it just felt like, just like in the game in Los Angeles, they were going to be able to overpower us again. But then Jamal Crawford starts getting red hot. And Chris Paul, every time that they swing the ball around the perimeter, even if Paul's open, he looks to make the extra pass for Crawford. And throughout the second quarter, they seem to be running through him. And all of a sudden, our foul trouble disappeared. All of a sudden, the Clippers role players and Chris Paul aren't getting into the game because they're not taking shots. You don't even notice Blake or DeAndre Jordan at all. So, I mean, to me, as I'm watching that game, and you could read, you know, my Twitter timeline, I'm saying it as it's going, that this is the best thing that could happen to the Pelicans, Jamal Crawford being hot, and then, again, at the end of the game, not really going to the bigs, they're going to Crawford, and down the stretch, he misses the same big shots that he was making, and the Pelicans win the game, and a game in which, you know, you could say Anthony Davis and Tyreek Evans for them had, I don't know, C-plus, C games. I mean, because they did well in other statistics, but they really didn't score. They were combined 10 of 35. I mean, yeah. You know, so it really wasn't a great game for our studs. I really put a lot, you know, a lot of the reason why the Clippers kind of faltered down the stretch on Jamal Crawford and the fact that he did get hot earlier in that first half.
And you will remember the few baskets that the Los Angeles Clippers made to get back to within the two, so it wasn't such a dramatic loss for them. They were out all from Blake Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't clean, they weren't pretty. It wasn't like Blake Griffin was getting the ball and destroying people down low. Like one of them, I believe he dribbled it off his own foot, dribbled between his leg, it fell between his legs, he turned around, picked it up, dodged a guy, and then managed to lay it in. I mean, that was not how he drew that up in his mind. But he was being effective. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, Jamal Crawford is a relentless gunner, and all he's going to do is take jumpers. So that can sting you just as badly as it can help you. And he ended up with 31 points on 23 shots, which is pretty good, but it's not amazing. So
yeah, and again, I mean, Anthony Davis picks up two fouls in the first 7 minutes he's on the court. He only picks up one more in the next 30. I mean, Jamal Crawford, yes, I know Al-Farouq Aminu and sometimes Morrow foul jump shooters, but for the most part, if a guy's taking jump shots, your team's not going to get into the penalty. They're not going to rack up fouls. So, again, I mean, points are points, but there's, you know, Blake Griffin getting a foul on Anthony Davis and hitting two free throws, to me, is worse than Jamal Crawford hitting a three-point play as far as a three-point shot as far as how it could affect the game in total. So I really thought the game changed there. I thought that it was starting to be similar to the game we saw in Los Angeles. I think that we have to acknowledge that this is a kind of a tough matchup right now for Anthony Davis on the offensive end. I mean, his two worst games this month are against the Clippers. And it's because when he faces up, you know, he can't really drive on Blake. Blake has the quickness like he does, and he's forced to shoot over him. And yeah, if his shot's going, you know, he should be fine. But his options are really limited at this point until he could develop a post game as far as just going ISO against Blake. I think what they need to do is get him the ball on the move against Blake. Specifically, I think of that little baseline play that they run for him at times where, you know, he comes off some picks baseline, the ball swings to that side of the floor, and they get him the ball on the move about 8 feet from the basket. They need to do stuff like that. I really don't think he's going to have much success in his career isolating against Blake.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, at least he could be an extremely good distraction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't think pure isolation. The guy has 6 blocks in the third quarter alone, grabs 13 rebounds. I mean, for almost anybody else, and I think you said it in your recap, this is a great game, and it's a down game for him. The two, you know, maybe you could even argue, I would say the three stars that kind of come out of nowhere for this game. Anthony Morrow, obviously, with 27, pretty much matching Crawford early. Aginsa, who puts up 14 and 11, I think he did some nice things offensively. And then Darius Miller, in which, you know, I could see this easily being his last season with this franchise. Even if he goes out, you know, always remember him for this one game. Probably his best overall game, or most impactful, meaningful game in his 2 years here. 16 points on 9 shots. I mean, really, those three role players, big part of why the team won this game.
Right. And, you know, Miller keeps pulling off, like, you know, 5-minute game or 8-minute games where he basically gets one stat. And what I mean by one stat is he gets a shot attempt or a rebound or a assist or a point. That's pretty much all he does. And this game he was hitting his shots. I mean, some of them were really big shots. It was a good game for Darius. But, again, just look at what he gave us other than that shooting. One rebound, one assist, one steal in 29 minutes. So, while you got to give the guy credit for shooting, this isn't a guy who's got a NBA game, which it's kind of crappy for me to say something about the guy when this is like a big game for him. But keep your expectations in check, because there's a lot of people who got really, really hyped up about Darius Miller and, oh no, maybe we should make sure he stays next year. And I don't know if this one game or even two games, because he didn't play too bad the next game, were worth it.
Let me ask you this. Let's say the Pelicans don't bring him back. What are the odds that he starts off the season next year with a guaranteed contract for an NBA team?
Zero. Guaranteed? No chance at all. I mean, he will get summer league invites. He will probably be in a training camp, and he'll probably end up overseas.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's not young or athletic the way that, like, a Xavier Henry is, to where, you know, a bad team could take him on and give him a chance the way the Lakers did Henry. Nor has he even had the production so far in his career that Xavier Henry has had. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a very small chance he's in the league. I think he might be a 10-day player or, you know, a guy with a contract that the team would basically have to decide on whether to guarantee it within a month or two of the NBA season. But yeah, I agree. Not only do I not see him on this team, I don't see him in the NBA next year.
Yeah. So you brought up Ajinka. He is a Clipper slayer. Or sinker. I guess a Clipper is a boat, so he sinks them. So if you, like, we mentioned this before, like, he's like a great situational player against certain types of centers. He's actually pretty good. So he's played fairly well against Memphis. He's played well against Indiana. But do you know what his average is against the Los Angeles Clippers are this year? He's played 3 games against them.
I do not. I'm going to guess 9 points and 6 rebounds on 60% shooting.
He is averaging 14.7 points, 11 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block, and 5 fouls, so we'll give him that, on 56% shooting in 27 minutes.
Wow.
The dude is a monster when he faces the Clippers.
Yeah, and I believe the first time he played him was like his second game. The first game was against Portland, and then like almost immediately. So yeah, that's impressive.
So I think what we need to do is, because we're going to be facing the Clippers going forward, and you always hear about franchise bringing in the LeBron stopper and the Kobe stopper and the Dwight Howard stopper. They always talk about Jason Collins being the Dwight Howard stopper. We've got the Clipper stopper right here. Just bring him in back next year, minimum contract, play him only against the Clippers. We're good. We don't have to worry about the Clippers anymore.
Yeah, there you go. It's like when Aaron Gray was the kryptonite for Dwight Howard.
Right. I was wondering what his numbers look like for other teams, because I keep thinking, like, whenever he plays against a behemoth, a guy, or just a guy who's, I always say behemoth, but it's not even that. It's really whenever he plays against a guy whose skills require him to stay right around the basket. So there's not a lot of movement involved. There's not a lot of cutting, he can just basically stay around the basket with the guy and he doesn't have to reach or you know, commit as many fouls, that he seems to do fairly well. And his best games are just averages are against teams like Chicago, the Clippers, Indiana, Utah, and Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is Zaza Pachulia, Utah's Derek Favors, Chicago, of course, is Noah, and then the Indiana is Hibbert. So it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, especially defensively, because a lot of what the Pelicans do is when they have one big man hedge, the other big man just has to stay by the basket and essentially, you know, cover anybody who's rolling to the basket or just defend that area. And where it could hurt you is if one of the two big men could pop out and shoot. And really, that's not what the Clippers do. They like to do the pick and roll and then send a big man flying right to the basket. So it's almost a perfect matchup in a lot of ways. I will say that in the fourth quarter, when DeAndre Jordan came back in fresh, it was really hard for Ajinsa to grab rebound. I mean, Jordan, yeah. You know, Jordan was getting offensive rebounds. He got three offensive rebounds in that final 7 minute stretch, five total, when he came back into the game. So, but yeah, I mean, at this point, it's not like the Pelicans have much to offer at the center position. I think Ajinsa did great in that scenario. And yeah, the other two, I mean, Darius Miller to play all 12 minutes of that fourth quarter, guy gives you 9 points on four shots, two of the biggest buckets. Like I said, don't even expect him to be in the league next year, but always remember him for this game. Let me ask you one more thing. Give me your three favorite wins of the season.
Clippers, Heat, and Portland.
Okay, I got see, we didn't talk about this beforehand. I knew you were going to say those three. Let me ask you one more question. Can you name what all three of those wins have in common?
The Pelicans won? No, I have no idea.
Eric Gordon did not play in...
Oh, God.
So...
It's a poor dude's not even playing this week, and we're still gonna just completely murder him, aren't we?
Okay. Is everything off? Can we not just talk about? I mean, this team going into that San Antonio game, which we said we're not gonna count, but going into that San Antonio game was 6-2 without Eric Gordon, including the three best wins of the season. The only losses were that Memphis game where they were actually without Tyreek and Gordon, in which we both acknowledge if they have Tyreek, they win that game easy. And then a Houston game. So, we have a piece coming out this week. It's not written by me, but one of our writers is going to look at Eric Gordon's on-off splits. He has by far the worst net rating on this team. I mean, again, I don't want to bash on the guy, and it's nothing personal, but at what point do we acknowledge that, okay, you know, it might be a bit of an extreme argument. The numbers don't say it is, but maybe logic says it is. It might be an extreme argument to say this team is better without him, but I don't think there's any argument that could be made that says anything but this team, no way and no how, has any use for Eric Gordon, whose skill set is just completely redundant. I mean, I know we've talked enough about this guy, but just looking at it again, the best wins of the season, whenever this team is playing the best, there's a common denominator, and I just don't know how you could go into the off season with anything else as your main priority, and it just... To me, it still hangs like a cloud, the singular cloud over this franchise. And walking away from this game, when I started to think of the games that I love the most this season, that was the one common denominator with all of them.
Right. Well, you know, you'll remember back to when we signed him. I always said that when you pay a guy big money, they have to be better than average in several stats. They have to be able to give you rebounds and steals and points, or assists and steals and points, or assists and block. I mean, you have to come up with three things that they're better than average for a guy to be worth paying a lot of money to. And Eric Gordon's better at average at exactly nothing overall.
Yeah.
So it's depressing fact, but you know, the way I look at it is, at worst, I mean, he was a valuable piece of the finishing five that we had. So if he comes back next year and he is just there to be like the extremely deadly knockdown shooter or the third valve in your offense that, you know, if your pick and roll doesn't work, it kicks out to him and he tries to make something happen, I think he would be extremely deadly in that role.
You think he's more deadly in that role than Anthony Morrow?
I won't say that, but in certain respects, he might be. I mean, he has a few other abilities that Morrow isn't great at. But I'd rather have Morrow in that spot. There's not any question. I mean, if you were asking me today, money put aside, don't worry about any of that stuff, would you rather have a five-man lineup that with Davis, Anderson, Holiday, Evans, and who? Morrow fits that role infinitely more times. Austin Rivers fits that role infinitely more times for me.
Oh, that's so, I mean, it's both exciting that we have good, cheap role players and depressing that we would choose guys who make $1 million over a guy who makes 15, but I couldn't agree more, and I don't want to get too down, but, you know, it was just, again, one of the first things I thought of after this win that, you know, I've got a piece coming out later in this week. I mean, to me, there is nothing more important this summer. We could do absolutely nothing this summer but move that contract, and I would be ecstatic. So,
yeah, I can't say I disagree. All right, so let's move on to the last game we want to talk about this week, the Utah Jazz game, where, you know, Anthony Davis comes out, walks around for 4 minutes, and then walks off the court, and we don't see him again. By the way, he scored exactly 0 points, had no rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks, no turnovers, nothing, and he was still +3 for the game. So he's that awesome. He just walks on the floor, and he's +3.
That game shouldn't count. That game brought down all his month and yearly stats. Like, the most infuriating game. I mean, thing about the game is, yeah, I mean, apparently, according to some people that were there at the game, he was talking with the trainer before the game even started, seemed to, you know, be having a little problem with his ankle, goes to the bench early in the game. There was a TV view in which the trainer kind of twisted something. Davis seemed to have a little bit of pain. We got word later on it was just pretty much wear and tear, and Anthony Davis was in, you know, warm-up gear in the next game we saw against San Antonio. You know, my gut tells me he's back on Monday for this game, but, you know, more than anything, the Pelicans were still able to win this game because the Jazz are just
terrible,
but more than anything, it ruined the aesthetics of the game. It was just an ugly game to watch once he left the court.
I'll also say Jen Hale dropped another one of her bombs on me. Like, if Anthony Davis, you know, my franchise player, Anthony Davis, goes to the back and you don't report to me that there is a beehive of activity with trainers running in and out of the locker room. I mean, that makes me think he's got an actual issue. I mean, if it's my ankle sprained, they're probably back there taping it and looking at it. But when you describe a beehive of activity with running people running in and out, then I start to get a little uncomfortable. So
I thought
Jen Hale's she's killing me this year.
I thought she said a beehive was active in the locker room and people were running out. No, yeah, I mean, she's dropping those hail bombs just to troll, you know, but
I think she is.
Yeah, I mean, it was an ugly game to watch. Evans and Morrow kind of took it upon themselves, especially early. I mean, early in the game, Evans was able to kind of get his way. I mean, you knew that this was going to happen. It happened the same in the Memphis game where the opposing team goes into the locker room and goes, guys, we have nobody else on this on the Pelicans that could beat us. Just pack the middle so Evans can't drive. And it was a little harder for him in the second half, but he, you know, he was able to adjust. He got his points, but most impressively, he got into the lane, collapsed the defense, and was able to get 15 assists in that game. Morrow hit some big shots, but man, I thought that the Jazz had a huge advantage with Derek Favors, and he only ends the game with 9 shots, although he did get to the free throw line 9 times. And I mean, you want to talk about offensive set. Their offensive sets look even slower and uglier than ours do. And Trey Burke, whatever, I have my opinion, would love to say that he's good, would, you know, I personally just, you know, yeah, this is a guy who's still young and could improve, but you tend to see guys improve when they're really great athletes and they just don't have the mental part of the game yet or the skill set of the game yet, and then eventually that catches up with their athleticism and you see a leap like the one Paul George made. Trey Burke just doesn't look like a good athlete. I mean, for a guy, if you're 6 feet tall in the NBA, you better be lightning bug quick, and they'll set picks for him, and you know, he'll use them, and one of our guards will just meet him on the other side of the pit. Like, he can't turn the corner. In a weird way, he reminded me a lot of Vasquez.
Yeah. You know actually who popped into my mind when I was watching him?
Hmm.
Brian Roberts.
Yeah.
Just something about the way he, like, he just moved around the court and took his deep shots just made me think of Brian Roberts, where, like, he has to, like, get his entire body behind it. He's got to launch himself with the shot because he doesn't have a tremendous amount of strength. And I don't know.
That's funny that you say that, because I posted their numbers side by side before the game, Trey Burke and Brian Roberts as a starter, and Roberts as a starter this year just flat out as better put up better numbers than Trey Burke.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, again, but Trey Burke is 20.
Burke is a rookie. You got to give him a little bit of a break, though.
Oh, I understand, but I mean, you know, first of all, this is the position that guys usually come in and make the biggest impact. And again, guys just don't get better because they get older. You know, if everybody who was just 21 or just 23 got better when they got older, then nobody would ever eventually find their way out of the league or plateau. Like I said, guys who get better are usually guys that have the athleticism but not the intelligence or the skills, and then that catches up, because you don't gain athleticism throughout your career. You could gain intelligence and skills. Burke's already a very smart player, you know, and he's already a guy who has skills like a jump shot. He just doesn't have the athleticism, and he's not going to gain that. Will he get better? Yeah, but I think he maybe gets 10, 12% better, not 20, 30, 40% better.
Yeah. I wanted to bring this up because you mentioned it before. I don't ever want Marvin Williams. No chance I would want him to see as a Pelican. I'm sorry. It was a bad game for him, but just, I mean, he feels like Jeff Green to me, because I criticize Jeff Green. So Green gets, he can have big games and he can score really well at times, but if you just look at, like, his averages, it's like they're just not really better than average at anything. And I guess if you're paying a guy $2 or $3 million and they're right at average or slightly below average at a bunch of different categories, you're okay. But I'd rather have a guy who's a specialist. Like, if I had the choice between Aminu and him, I'd take Aminu, just because at least I know Aminu's going to go out there and really rebound the hell out of that ball.
Or even Williams and Morrow, even though Morrow's not a traditional three. If I had to pick one of them to start at three for 82 games next year, I would pick Morrow.
Right. And even though you look at them and you know that, yeah, Marvin Williams will probably average more rebounds per game and be less foul prone and, you know, maybe get a few more free throws. But Maru's exceptional at his shooting. So you're going to get a little bit of tiny better than for a guy who's exceptional at one thing. I know this is kind of like the reverse argument what I was saying before. But, I mean, if you're going for a limited player, I would prefer to have an exceptional person at one thing than a guy who's just slightly less than average in everything.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
I completely agree. And he looks slow to me. He really looked like this final stage of his career is going to be as a small ball four. He doesn't look anything like a three to me. In fact, the guy who I thought looked a lot quicker, more explosive, was 74-year-old Richard Jefferson.
Right.
I mean, like, if I had to have a small forward on this team and I had to choose between...
It's a contract year.
If I had to choose between Marvin Williams and Richard Jefferson... today I would choose Richard Jefferson, and you know that guy's he's ancient. So yeah, I agree. I was able to, you know, cross Marvin Williams immediately off the list, unless you could get him for something crazy like the biannual exception for $2 million. But when I'm shopping around my mid level, there's no way I would be happy if he was the guy that we brought in.
You know who look to me like they are just waiting for the season to end, like they just don't want to play anymore? Gordon Hayward. Just, he looked a little bit better in the second half, but that first half of that game, it just looked like he was going to drive, and if nothing happened, he's going to throw up his arms and kind of look around and then wander back. Like, he's not playing basketball. I mean, I understand he's playing for the Utah Jazz, and they're terrible. But, man, he just looked so disinterested for a while.
And there was a play that I felt like they could have scored on every time that I was glad they didn't go to. But just putting Hayward in the pick and roll, our big would always sag off, and Hayward would have a wide-open 18-foot jumper. I think they could have ran that play literally all game and just continued to score. I thought their offensive sets and ball movement, like – It was the worst that I had seen in a long time. I thought Milwaukee was more impressive. Just going back, thinking of all the teams, this might have been the worst, offensive execution and sets I had seen this year. I really thought when Davis went out that Favors was just going to get the ball on the block on every possession. And, you know, he didn't. And they only gave him 32 minutes. I mean,
he only got 9 shots. Like, how does that happen?
I don't know. That was their huge mismatch. But, yeah, he only gets 32 minutes. I mean, Marvin Williams got 29. Richard Jefferson got 41. I mean, I don't understand it unless they're trying to lose. But this was just an absolutely ugly game. I thought, you know, again, the reserves, they each had their bright moments. I really liked some things that I saw with Austin Rivers and his aggressiveness in this game, but everybody, you know, for a small stretch had some praiseworthy things. Of course, Aminu comes back with 13 and 8. Ajinsa almost gets another double-double, and Babbitt spaced the floor a little bit. So I thought everybody kind of chipped in, but after this game, you saw what was coming because this was ugly, and you're heading into San Antonio on a 16-game losing streak, knowing AD's probably not going to play. You just you knew what was coming the next night.
Yeah, it was pretty much over. So we're not talking about San Antonio. I'm not doing it.
I don't see. There's really nothing to be gained there. The only thing I will say, I do want to say this because people seem worried. Yes, Tyreek Evans had a terrible game. The Spurs basically played him the way they played LeBron in the 06 finals where their big would just sag in, and then they would just stick on the shooters. So Evans not only had no way to get to the rim, but he had nobody to kick it out to. And if you're really worried that when this team is healthy, teams are going to do that to Evans again, I pray that they do, because everybody else will just feast. So I don't think it's a long-term concern. Just wanted to put
all
that
right
out there.
Yeah. So coming up, we get Sacramento, Denver, Utah, Portland this week, which is 4 games, pretty nice. And 3 of them are eminently winnable, and even Portland, because you and I are never scared of Portland. All 4 of these games, winnable. So which of these 4 teams would you like to talk about? I'm assuming we're going to skip Utah because we just saw Utah. Sacramento, Denver, or Portland? Which team you like?
I'm going to take the Kings in the first game in this little stretch.
Okay. Well, that'll surprise you who I'll take after that.
I mean, the first thing about this game, and, you know, with all the injuries, you got to have small little victories. The Pelicans win this game, and they're guaranteed to finish the season with a winning record at home. And to me, in a terrible season where things were just looking down and we were begging for it to end for a while there, you know, that's a nice little win to leave the home team crowd leaving happy more often than they're leaving sad. So excited about that. The other reason I have some optimism here is because the guy who I always felt was the toughest cover on this team, Isaiah Thomas, he's been out for a while, doesn't look like he's going to play. They've been starting rookie Ray McCallum in his place, who I believe I read somewhere that over his last three games, he had gotten nearly as many minutes as he had the first 3 months in the season. So it's kind of been thrown into the fire. They still have Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins, but I always felt Thomas was the guy that was the toughest cover for us. They're starting to play the young guys more, obviously, for developmental purposes, trying to get Derek Williams some time to see what they got. Ben McLemore has been playing more in a season in which really not an impressive rookie season for him at all. It's
been a freaking disaster, dude.
Yeah, I mean,
he has a 7.4 PER. You know who has a better PER than Ben McLemore? Darius Miller.
I mean, this. I was looking at the rookie. I think Michael Carter Williams is going to win it just based off of inflated stats. Playing on a terrible.
Well, there isn't anybody. I mean,
Oladipo is the best rookie in the class, hands
down. I'll agree with
that. It's not even close. Michael Carter Williams got those inflated stats on a terrible.
Oh, and he avoided having a 27-win losing streak, but only had 26.
Yeah, no.
So it's not historically awful.
Yeah, he toughed it out. I mean, just it's been a terrible rookie class. I mean, I was thinking about it. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. You can't take Noel because it's boring and we don't know who it is. With the sixth pick in the 2013 draft, okay, there's no trade options on the table. Even in retrospect, the New Orleans Pelicans select, who would you say there?
Burke.
You would take Trey Burke?
Mm-hmm.
He's not even in my top two or three. I'll give you another chance. Okay, think about it.
Well, you gotta give me 1 second. I'll go back and look who's available.
That's how memorable this class is.
I can't remember a ton of people in the draft. I mean, there's nobody who's standing out at all. All right, so let's see. NBA complete draft history. Gonna have to really dig here.
Riveting.
All right. Wow. I do have an easy answer. There's two easy answers for
this. Okay, let me hear them.
I would take either C.J. McCollum.
Wow, okay.
Who I still think he's shooting okay. That's it, shooting okay. Or Steven Adams.
All right, that's the one.
Those are the only ones I'd even consider.
I think the two most popular, the ones you would consider, are Steven Adams, and you and I aren't big fans of this guy, but most people.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis. How did they come? Yeah, but
what about Tim Hardaway Jr.? Because he plays in New York, apparently he's the best shooting guard to come along in a long time.
You're joking, but I'm watching Michigan today in the Elite Eight, and I'm honestly thinking, if I have to take Tim Hardaway Jr. or Trey Burke, who am I taking? Not just for the Pelicans, but just in general, who do I think is going to have the better career? I really think it could be Tim Hardaway because point guard is such a tough position. I mean, what's more valuable, the 18th or 19th best point guard in the league, which I really do think that's where Burke stays for a long time, or...
I could see Burke become a shooter. That's the only reason why I would still take
him. But you're not going to put... I mean, you can't put him at the two. I mean, Tim Hardaway's at least a good combo guard or a shooting guard. Like, you can't put Trey Burke at the two at 6 feet tall and 190 pounds. So you have to play him at point guard.
Can I take Pierre Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. I mean, at what point does Pierre Jackson become in the conversation as a guy you might want to take at six? But
is Nate Walters any good up in Minnesota or Milwaukee? I'm just stretching here.
Oh,
okay.
But I mean, it was an absolutely terrible, terrible draft. And Ben McLemore was a guy that was a locked top three pick, fell, you know, it looked like the Pelicans could have had him, could have had Noel. I'm so glad that they got out of that draft. It really looks like it's going to be one of the worst drafts of all time. But, yeah, so they're playing him more, getting him more minutes. I mean, this is still a team that could score. This is a team that's staying in games. I mean, they went up to Dallas just a couple nights ago, gave Dallas a game, only lost by three. You know, they're gonna beat you down on the offensive glass. They're gonna get to the free throw line just because of their size and because of Cousins in particularly. I mean, if the Pelicans don't have Anthony Davis, I consider them the underdogs in this game. And even with Anthony Davis, you know, I think him and Tyreke are gonna have to play at a pretty high level, and they're going to have to get at least one or two of the role players to show up and have a good night again in order to win this game. I just think they're one of those terrible yet dangerous teams every night.
All right. So I got to say, I think the Pelicans will win this game as long as Reggie Evans plays under 15 minutes. If he plays more than that, Pelicans don't have a chance. He's that impactful. And I'm joking, of course, but Evans is a monster, and that this team doesn't have anyone that can counter. We don't got like the undersized freaky, you know, battler. So who's going to match up with Evans?
Yeah.
It's one of those things that can actually sting you if you're not making your shots. He's going to grab the rebound or grab the offensive rebound for his own team and make you pay. So,
yeah, I mean, it could be like the Toronto game where the Pelicans outplay them, but they just control the boards. And like I said, Sacramento's a team that gets to the free throw line a ton, and that's what, you know, this defense always, you know, seems to have problems with. But again, this is, I mean, Isaiah Thomas, a little 5'9 point guard, he gets to the line about six times a game, and he'll be out. Cousins will still get there a ton, but I don't know, just something. It's a game the Pelicans are at home, and you would think with the teams that they've been beating, the Clippers, Heat, et cetera, that this should be a no-brainer win. But even with Anthony Davis, it's still a game that scares me more than most bad teams do.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Rudy Gay there.
I know you've had – I'm going to wait for Jen Hale to drop a bomb. I'm going to wait for Jen Hale to come out halfway through the game and go, Rudy Gay has been talking about declining his player option. And I talked to Dell Demps earlier in the day.
Oh, my God.
He was a free agent. He would be incredibly interested just to see you have a heart attack.
That's just cruel. Wow. All right. So let's just assume Anthony Davis is playing. Put the money on the line. Pelicans win or lose?
I think that they win that one only because I really believe, well, not only because, but mainly because I believe that the role players really feel comfortable at home now. The crowd's been good. So I see them winning behind more strong efforts from the role players.
Okay. I agree with you. Now, for the next game, I was thinking about jumping all the way to Portland at the end, but that is actually, you know, it's on the road. It's at the end of a three-game road trip. Portland they're not playing well, but, you know, we talked about them sort of recently. So I'm instead going to talk about Denver because you got to remember this team won 57 games last year. This is a steeper decline. You remember the Hornets when they won their 56 and were a second seed. And they fell apart pretty quickly, but this is even a steeper decline than that because these guys are just a wreck. And I just look at this team. I fully expect a bloodbath this summer. I really 100% believe that half of this team will be shipped out in some deal or another coming up this summer. I don't think that the Kroenke family is going to want to sit on, you know, this team. They don't think that there's no way you can look at how these guys played, even if all of them were healthy, and say this team could have competed in the West. There's just not really any way you can do that. But the thing that makes the least amount of sense to me is it seems like the Nuggets' number one person they want to move is Ken Fareed. If you could get your hands on Ken Fareed, would you be happy?
Oh,
or not?
Yeah, definitely. And but see, I don't believe that, because if you look at it, all the Kenneth Fareed rumors were to the New York Knicks, and we know, you know, if the Knicks are interested in somebody, supposedly the other team's trying to move them. I don't buy it for a second, but no, he's
there were a couple other guys out there who were saying that Fareed seemed to be on the market.
Yeah, and
although they were asking for a lot for him, but
and I could see them being worried about paying them, because I mean I have no idea what you pay a guy like that, and it's reasonable to wonder, one, can a hustle energy guy maintain for 8-10 years, and two, if you give him a big contract, does he lose some of that hunger that, you know, made him who he was? So I kind of get it, especially if they could get a nice return for him.
So then here's the question for you. Let's say the worst happens and Ryan Anderson can't play for us next year. And the Pelicans decide they move Eric Gordon. They have some space now. Would you put Fareed as somebody that you would go after? And he's not available on the free agent market, but you could make a trade or something. Would Fareed be someone you would like to see next to Anthony Davis in our front line? Do you think they'd match well?
So I think these are two different questions. Would I like to see it? Yes. Do I think in a million years that Dell and Monty, that's the type of guy they want to put next to Anthony? No. So I think we could postulate and, you know, talk. I think that it's clear that they want to put a guy who defends centers next to Anthony Davis to protect him from the wear and tear. So would I want it? Yes. Do I think it would ever happen? No.
Okay.
Sorry. But I do. I mean, I really do like the guy.
Yeah.
I don't get it either. Let me ask you, I mean, not only that, but You say you think that they're going to make big moves this year. Do you think they're more likely to move the guys who were there this year? Or, I mean, obviously the two big pieces they're missing are JaVale McGee and Danilo Gallinari. Do you think that the injured guys are more likely to move? Do you think the guys that are there are more likely to move? And outside of Ty Lawson and Kenneth Fareed, who do you think on this team really has trade value?
I honestly, the two guys who were injured this year, they're not going anywhere. Like JaVale McGee there was already real questions about whether he could be a valuable basketball player. And then you take him out for an entire year with a season-ending injury, and you add in the fact that they gave him a freaking $10 million a year contract. That guy's not going anywhere. I mean, if you go look at the, like, Bill Simmons' terrible contract list, JaVale McGee should be, like, one or two on that list. I'm sorry. This guy's got another 3 years left on his deal, and he's just a very questionable basketball talent. Danilo Gallinari's now had injuries every single year he's been in the league. This is the biggest one. While he's still going to have some value, I don't think anybody's going to want to take on that risk without trading away somewhat damaged goods themselves. So I believe 100%. I think Ty Lawson will stay there no matter what. I think it's going to be – I would expect that Chandler goes, Hickson goes. I bet they could find a taker for Nate Robinson. I would expect that Jordan Hamilton, of course, will be gone. I don't expect Darrell Arthur to be there any longer. And honestly, you know, Fareed, I actually believe he will be shipped out.
Hmm.
I really think that they're going to just clean house. And they're going to end up with basically Ty Lawson. And they might even float Ty Lawson. I mean, it depends on how bad they think it gets. If they can't get any sort of real offers, they may just start over. You got to blow it up at some point. And Ty Lawson is one of the players in the league who's good enough that he's going to guarantee you 25 to 30 wins a season just if he plays most of the season.
Yeah, and it was funny. It was looking a little bright there for a while because they actually do have the rights to whatever the worst pick is or the better pick is, theirs or the Knicks. Mm-hmm. It looked like they were going to get, you know, a top 5-6 pick. But, of course, the Knicks had to go on a win streak and now might even make the playoffs with the way the Hawks are falling apart. So, yeah, it'd be an interesting team to watch. I would love it if somehow Eric Gordon ends up on their roster next year. But
would you trade Eric Gordon for Danilo Gallinari?
I would prefer. I don't want to spoil a whole article I got coming out this week.
Okay. Don't answer the question.
I would say no to that one, but I would be tempted by a JaVale McGee.
Really?
Oh yeah.
God, there's no way you can convince me to take JaVale McGee on my team. No way.
You got to know I see Eric Gordon as a net negative. I can't imagine 20 to 25 minutes of McGee being worse than 20 to 25 minutes of Ajinsa, Steemsma, Withy. I thought he was fantastic in the 20 to 25 minute role last year. And if you get me that JaVale McGee, I think this is one of the best front courts in the NBA. But
jeez.
Yeah, I know. He's on Shaq and a Fool 5 or 6 times a year. So everybody, you know, just says low IQ, but he's a guy who consistently put up good numbers, especially when given a limited role. So I don't know. But yeah, that's I guess I would consider that more than Gallinari because I think you could get 80 to 90% of Gallinari for the mid-level. I don't think you could get 80 to 90% of JaVale McGee, you know, for a mid-level exception. There's just not bigs out there that would take that. If a big is serviceable, he's getting good money. So,
all right.
So yeah, I think the interesting part of that game, I think whoever wins that game, basically, that pick becomes the 12th pick. Whoever loses that game, that pick becomes the 11th. I think it's pretty much set now that the Pelicans will either be handing over the 11th or 12th pick to mm-hmm. the Philadelphia 76ers, unless, of course, they get lucky. And I think that game will pretty much decide whether it'll be the 11th or 12th. So,
yeah. And just for all of you people who are listening, you know, guess who Draft Express is putting at the 11th spot that the Pelicans would have to give up? Yusuf Nurkic.
Yusuf
Nurkic. Of Cedevita. He's an international player. And you go look at his stats internationally. I remember, like, last year we were talking Dario Saric, and like he was averaging, like, 9 points and 4 assists and was supposed to be an amazing point forward. He makes Yusuf look pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, and keep that up while you have it, because I think I remember in the really weak 2013 draft, Draft Express had Dario Saric going 24th. Where do they have him in this super strong 2014 draft?
Ninth.
So,
and last year the Pelicans were possibly going to be getting, you know, Gary Harris was like 10th or 11th. He's 15th this year. I mean, the difference is Doug McDermott is freaking 10th this year.
Yeah, there's a couple guys I like in this. I actually like Aaron Gordon more than most. I think he is the next Sean Marion. He's a guy that I would actually draft higher than most have him. But there's only 3, 4, 5 guys I like. It's going to be funny. Seeing exactly who Philly does take there. But, yeah, something interesting to watch for this game. I think, I mean, again, all of this is so depending on who's playing, who's not. We talk about Anthony Davis. I mean, all we've heard so far with Eric Gordon is knee tendonitis. Do you feel like we see him back at all this week?
No, I think I said before, I expect we don't see him.
For the season?
I think he's done for the season.
Ugh. What?
Yeah, I know that you want to be able to trade him. So,
yeah.
I just something about it. I don't expect to see him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to see Brian Roberts bounce right back. But just speaking of injuries before we get off the podcast, the only other really big thing that happened this week is the team officially did announce that Ryan Anderson will be having surgery. He's going to be having it on April 8th. We tried our best to get, you know, specific details of the surgery, but, you know, as usual, the team's being kind of secretive with what's going on. To the best of my knowledge, and what seems to make sense is it looks like he's going to be having what's called an anterior cervical disectomy. And, you know, this surgery it's fairly common. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, why did they take so long? Why not just have the surgery immediately? First of all, you always, always, always want to do everything possible to not try to have the surgery. I myself have a herniated disc, got it about 9 months ago, and I've been constantly doing things, rehabilitating, trying to put off the surgery. My doctor himself has had one, and he's been able to put off the surgery for 20 years. So you try your best to not have the surgery, so it's actually not abnormal. I don't think you could criticize the team or Ryan Anderson for not having the surgery. You know, it's a surgery. It's actually kind of a weird surgery. They actually go in through the front of the neck. If you want to watch any of these surgeries online, you could. I would suggest that you don't.
You're a ghoul.
Yeah, but if you do, but they actually go in through the front. And, you know, it's a disectomy. And there's two choices here. You could either do a fusion with a plate, or sometimes they take a piece of bone from somewhere else and fuse the disc space after they remove the disc. Sometimes they don't. The latest research has showed that there's really no difference in the recovery whether you do the fusion or you don't. Either way, it's usually, I'll say this word because there's always exceptions, but usually about a 4 to 6 week recovery time. NOLA.com ran a story of Kenny Gaddison, who about 15 years ago had the same exact surgery in January and was actually able to play in the playoffs. It's a surgery that usually recovers about 4 to 6 weeks. I will say, though, that Peyton Manning did have the same surgery. About 6 weeks later, he was fine, but then he had a setback, had to have an additional procedure, and then, you know, we all know that he missed that entire season before coming back. You know,
but he came back strong.
Yeah, he came back strong. So I met with my doctor. I had a checkup this week, just coincidentally, and I just pounded him with a bunch of questions about the surgery. He says, you know, that there's really no long-term effects aside from the areas above and below where the surgery was done now takes on added pressure. So they tend, you know, they tend to be degenerative. And usually this is a surgery that, you know, he says that it's a joke in the medical community that doctors basically put their kids through college with this surgery because it's one that once you have it about every 10 years, you'll have to have another surgery. But he, you know, he says he would fully expect a world class athlete or an NBA athlete to bounce back. You know, will be out of the hospital that day or the next day, bounce back within 4 to 6 weeks. He would expect that, you know, the guy would be shooting back to normal, playing and everything by August at the latest was his guess. So, I mean, as for right now, all we could do is kind of guess and speculate. The team said they'll give more surgery details after the surgery. on April 8th, but really, regardless of what the details are, it's just going to be a wait-and-see thing. Most people within 4 to 6 weeks are fine and good, ready to go. Other people have setbacks. Their bodies don't take it, so you'll never know. But it's a very, on average, a very successful surgery. All the research I've seen says 95 to 98% successful in relieving the pain. So, you know, it's something that I would say, you said, Ryan, you know, worst case scenario, Ryan Anderson's not back next year. I would say that's possible. I would put that at 3 to 5%. I would say 80, 90% he's ready for the start of the season. 5 to 8% that, you know, he's not ready to give it a full go until into the season, maybe December, maybe January, and then very small percent that it goes beyond that. So the most I got right now, and you know, obviously keep you updated, but I think that's huge news. I think that's bigger news. What happens to Ryan Anderson is more important than any free agent we sign this offseason. He's him along with Drew are our biggest free agents. So something to monitor going forward.
Yep. All right. So I forgot to ask you prediction for this week. I'm going to go 2-2 actually, because that is a 3-game road trip. So I'm feeling like they'll take Sacramento, they'll take Utah, but I actually feel like they might lose in Denver and Portland.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
If you told me Anthony Davis was gonna be back, you know, ready to go starting in Sacramento, I'd go 3-1. If he's not, I'd go 1-3. So I'm gonna hedge because I surprisingly have no information. So I agree. I'll go 2-2 as well.
Okay. All right, so looks like we're looking for 2-2. You should only watch 2 games we're going to win, right? No. Watch all the games, because if Anthony Davis is playing, it's always going to be awesome. And actually, that Portland game, I love watching Aldridge and Davis match up. I just, there's something about those two guys. Probably because I hate Portland, and anytime Aldridge gets stuffed, I feel good. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next week.